In any few days, in any week, a fortnight, there are bound to be matters of various degrees of interest in the general field which I cover here. But in the last few days, one thing has been so outstanding that it's had almost the effect of making me forget all the others. That is the compulsory withdrawal of the motion picture called The Blackboard Jungle from the competition in Venice for the international prize. And this is of such colossal importance that at the risk of wearing out my welcome, I think I should like to go into all of the aspects of it. So I think every one of them, separately and all together, constitute a real test case, not only of certain rights and privileges, but of certain attitudes we all have. Let me say at once that this forced withdrawal of The Blackboard Jungle was followed by the substitution of a motion picture in the competition called The Interrupted Melody, or Interrupted Melody, a picture about which I have no opinions and certainly no knowledge. I only wonder whether the substitution of this particular picture was as compulsory as the withdrawal of The Blackboard Jungle. Now, the background is simply this, that a number of pictures having competed for the privilege in the United States, as I understand the setup, one was sent abroad as our entry into the international competition, one in the category of the feature film. And it is reported, and apparently this has been official, that this picture, The Blackboard Jungle, was withdrawn at the instance of our ambassador to Italy, Mrs. Claire Booth Luce. And startling as this is, one thing I believe becomes clear at the very beginning: either Ambassador Luce did this of her own instance, or she was ordered to do it. Either she did it and is approved of by the State Department, therefore the State Department is responsible, or she did it entirely on her own and the State Department can still repudiate her action. Now, there are the facts. Obviously, you bring up the question, who has the right to compel a picture to be withdrawn? I don't even know how you do this. That is certainly not clear. What is clear is that MGM, that made the picture, is furious and raging and has threatened to do certain things about it. But there is something ambiguous about all of these international prizes, which makes it difficult to come to a clear-cut decision here. No one is ever clear as to who decides what pictures each country shall enter into the competition. Who are the judges who decide among the various American entries before we send some abroad? It happens that I knew once, or one year, I mean, I knew a judge of the American film entries. He was quite distinguished in other fields, and he hated every picture that he saw. Gave his vote for the least offensive, I think, of those that he could. Now, there's nothing official about this competition. I've heard rather dubious tales about the way that these things are run, but that doesn't matter at the moment. The picture that wins one of these international prizes is marked and gets some additional advertising, gets some additional patronage, and some additional profit. A few weeks ago, it seems to me, can't be more than 3 months ago, the motion picture Marty won an international award, and that seemed to have been very well taken in all parts. Now, you'll notice, as I said, there's nothing official about this. This is nothing like the sending of a play or of an orchestra abroad under the auspices or the semi-auspices of the State Department. This is something that a lot of people interested in the movies or in the arts or in prizes get together and do. It hasn't the status of the Biennale, the art exhibition that takes place every couple of years in Venice, because there every country except our own actually has a pavilion to exhibit works which, in a sense, are officially sent out. The United States has no pavilion there, but America has, in a sense. That is to say, the Museum of Modern Art has bought, paid for the pavilion, although the Museum of Modern Art doesn't arrogate to itself the exclusive right to choose the pictures that are being sent there. But if things like driving out a competitor, such as the Blackboard Jungle, from a competition, if things like that are going to happen unofficially, maybe we're better off not to have the United States officially sending out works of art of any kind, movies or otherwise. Now, it is obvious that I am displeased by this action, and that surprises no one. I'm displeased by any action that arbitrarily infringes in any way on any kind of expression. But let me try to explain the official position, which was made clear not only in this case, but in many others. I'm not now quoting any official. I'm quoting an Associated United Press report. But this is so commonplace that all these statements are pretty much the same in every case. In this particular case, as you may know, the Blackboard Jungle is a study of rather dreadful delinquency in schools, or rather in a school, in a single school, and that school a trade school. And therefore the position officially is that this movie, The Blackboard Jungle, presents United States schools in a bad light. And secondly, that it gives an impression that all the schools are like the one shown in the picture. This is not an unusual thing either. Now, the next point certainly is that foreigners, especially, can't be expected to see how much of this is exaggerated, how much this is a separate case and not a general case, and so forth. It is indeed often said that we ourselves, or rather the less perceptive, the less critical among us, which means the great majority of people go to the movies, that they also cannot be expected to see that this is a special case or an unusual case, and it cannot possibly apply to every case. Well, certainly if we can't, foreigners could be forgiven for saying, well, this is certainly what all schools are in the United States. Just as a generation or two ago, longer ago than that, we must have read Tom Brown at Rugby and thought that all British schools were like that. I don't suppose they really were. And the final argument was that in view of all of this, in view of the fact that American schools as a totality are being put in a very bad light and foreigners will believe what they see, then it is natural that our enemies, that is to say, communists, will use all of this as a confession of the low state of our culture. They will not say, see, this is a criticism of the defects of American culture, which American people are bold enough to make. No, they will say, see, this is what Americans themselves say their culture has reached. Well, now, we know the answer to all of this, but let's see what goes on. What are the consequences of an action like this? Let's assume that everything that I have said is true, instead of assuming, as I have up to now, that there's a great deal of truth in this. Suppose that all of these points are true. What are the consequences? What is it that people want? Well, they want. The action is perfectly clear. They want that this picture shall not be shown to foreigners. Now, how are you going to go about this? Well, as far as I know, there is no way in which you can prevent anybody from shipping a print of a motion picture to anyone, anywhere in the world. Certainly, if there is any impediment, then you'll have bootleg pictures. That is simply impossible. Well, then now, ideally, what does Mrs. Luce and what does the State Department want? Since they want that this picture should not be shown abroad, the only way that they can be sure of this is that the picture shouldn't have been made at all. Now, therefore, if State Department can't keep our pictures from going into Europe, State must prevent our making pictures here in the United States. Now, that, of course, is perfect nonsense. That's desperate logic, isn't it? Well, I only carry it through to show you The process of suppression simply won't work. And yet, before I leave this, I feel it only right to say that an action like that of Ambassador Luce, which MGM has called high-handed, really betrays a tendency toward, I'm trying to phrase this correctly so as not to be excessive myself, I'd say it betrays a tendency toward ruling over the complete freedom of expression which we've had before. I'm putting it as mildly as I can. Certainly, if we are to make Ambassador Luce happy, and I'm sure the whole State Department will be glad to do that, then we must ask her to tell us what pictures to make. If she's willing to undertake that responsibility and is willing to destroy that portion of American freedom which we now have in regard to making pictures, we ought to hear about it, and ought to hear about it fast. All right, now let us see, are there any alternatives? Assuming, as I think we still may for a time, that state was not going to interfere with freedom of expression in America. This freedom, by the way, has only recently been won by the movies, and I think, therefore, we ought to be particularly careful to cherish it in every single respect. What then? What else can be done? Well, certainly pictures should be made better, and this particular picture should have been made as a better picture. But let's not go too far about this in attacking a picture of this sort. People say, well, the strokes are very broad and it exaggerates and so on. And I'm afraid that if we look carefully, we'll see that a picture, you can say almost inevitably, must imply the situation we're putting in front of you is a general situation. The picture need not imply that this situation is a universal one. But frequent it is. Otherwise, somehow the picture ceases to lack in appeal. Imagine a picture about delinquency of this order, which is very sharply done and very brilliantly done in the picture. And suppose we say, this is a totally unique case. It only happened once in the course of the last 50 years. Well, you get then a melodrama without any bearing at all. You can do it, of course. A murder, each individual murder has only happened once, and any time you put an historical murder on the screen, you're only playing for one particular bit of melodrama. But if you say, here is something which is happening now and it's important, you can't say it's happening only in one isolated, minute district. In order to get the total appeal, you have to assert that this is frequent, possibly general. You do not have to say all schools are like this. Now, what are you going to do? How are you going to make your general appeal and still be fairly true to life and not too deeply exaggerated? Well, one way is, you might show a parallel school in which everything was all sweetness and light. And how you're going to do this and make a good drama, I simply don't know. I just don't think that you can possibly do it. Now, actually, in most cases, pictures like this offer a somewhat pat solution, a bit of magic at the end, a sleight of hand. If only a few people would, etc., etc. I've forgotten at the moment exactly how the Blackboard Jungle does fob you off at the end, but it doesn't leave you saying, this dreadful thing has got us in such a blind alley we'll never be able to get out of it. You still get the sense that evil is dominant, just as you get it in all of those pictures of the Crime Doesn't Pay series, generally. I'm sorry, I think that's a name of an actual series. I meant in all of the horror strips and all of the series on the air, which defend themselves always by saying, we don't incite the crime, we prove the crime doesn't pay. You still get there some enormous sense that the criminal is the more powerful and that the crime is more interesting and all those other things. So it is hard for us to insist that this picture should turn back on itself seriously and say, this isn't important. Now, you don't get, in this picture, any sense that the community cares about the kind of violence. Community doesn't seem to care about anything that happens until an actual outrage occurs, and then everybody runs to arms, like the Minutemen. That, of course, is the greatest danger in the world, that we go to hysterical extremes too late, instead of caring a little bit and obviating dangers a little bit earlier. And here I think, actually, that the picture is rather true to life, because the commonest thing we know is that the communities don't care. In a way, there was more protest against this picture than against the conditions that the picture exposes. That is, a lot of people thought that somehow it wasn't right to make such a violent picture, and such a one-sided one, as they said, and so forth. Possibly that's quite true. But even with that, by the way, the total of protests is extremely small. And this, I think, is a vital point, the issue in the whole matter. There's virtually no protest, except from the interested parties, the exhibitors and the makers, MGM, Dorisharry, and so forth. There have been no protest against any action, against the action of Ambassador Luce. And here, I must say that I'm saying nothing of my own about... I'm not saying anything about other people, I'm not saying about myself. I have made no protest. I've been busy with other things. We've all been busy with other things. And the fact simply is that we're all interested parties. It's our liberty that's been invaded as much as MGM's liberty. We should protest against this outrage, this high-handed action, as well as Dorisharry and the whole MGM organization and their distributors. Because some fraction of liberty has been taken away from us. As it happens, we're living in an era of no protest, as if we had endless quantities of liberty in a bank, and we haven't. And this lack of protest, I think, is a prime phenomenon of our time, and of course a dangerous one. Now, some 15 or 20 years ago, there was a lot more protest. And in particular, and people who made movies, and some movies like this Backboard Jungle, Hollywood writers, they were terribly rich, and they did protest, and people made a great deal of fun of them. They talked of these Hollywood writers and directors sitting around their gold-plated swimming pools and sending a few $1,000s to the poor and so forth. Well, it wasn't quite so dangerous to protest at that time, but it also wasn't popular either. And some of these people who protested were indeed inspired by communism. Most of them were not. It is not only the Hollywood Ten who appeared as unfriendly witnesses, and about whose fate I think some of us may eventually change our minds. Not only they, there were hundreds and hundreds of people out there. The fact that they were making a great deal of money, purveying pretty third-rate stuff, shouldn't close our eyes to the other fact that they were aware of what was going on, and especially from the time the New Deal came in, they were fighting for our liberties as desperately as anyone ever did. Incidentally, I suggest that you might read Murray Kempton's book. It's called Part of Our Time. I think the subtitle is something like Some Ruins and Monuments of the 1930s. It's almost entirely sketches of either radicals or labor union people in the 30s, and the labor union people come out very much better than the intellectual, literary, artistic radicals. Kempton writes very brilliantly. He writes regularly in the New York Post. This work, this book, has the effect something like fiction, and it has also the defect of fiction, because like the Blackboard Jungle, it implies that they were all like this, describes certain people seems to generalize from them. But he is rather fair, he is totally fair, I would say, to those who worked their way through communism and came out at the other end. He is not altogether fair to those who didn't. I'm not putting any one person in either of these categories. I think that his account of Paul Robeson is as mean and unfair as anything I've ever read. However, the thing that he doesn't allow for is that even before the 1930s, it was noted again and again that The radicals were the only people left who were using the soapbox. So all protest became equated with radicalism, which it actually isn't, not in our history at least. And then there was a long time when only the Reds were shouting for free speech. And so free speech became tinged with crimson, or with communism. And it's a perfectly simple thing, that nature abhors a vacuum. If the owners won't use their land, then squatters will come on it, or poachers. And if Americans won't fight for a free speech, then others will, and will use a free speech against them. Now, we get all of this on account of a motion picture that won't get a prize, which it probably doesn't deserve anyhow. And the answer to that is yes. Yeah. A picture, no matter what its quality, that is denied the right to compete, brings up all of these questions. And incidentally, it brings up one more, which can't really be of much pleasure to Ambassador Luce. Because one thing is absolutely certain, that the Blackboard Jungle now will probably be seen all over Europe by 10 times as many audiences as would have seen it otherwise. And I would say it serves a right. But also, I'm a very constructive critic, as I hope has been clear before, and I think there is a way, which it is far too late for Ambassador Luce to follow, but she might have taken a little thought at the beginning. At least you might try, you know, to put a foreword to the picture, saying, in effect, this is a dramatic rendering of an extreme situation, as most dramas are. This situation exists in some, but certainly not in all, schools. And add to this, this is also a very dramatic demonstration of one form of American freedom, which is very important to them, that is the freedom to criticize their own institutions and to speak out about them. Now, the picture may be wrong, but it was not wrong to make it. It may have been stupid to make it, ill-advised, but there's nothing wrong about making it. And I think Ambassador Luce might contemplate the words that were attributed to Voltaire. There seems to be some doubt if he actually said it. The famous words about disagreeing with you 100%, that is not what he said, totally disagree with you, but we'll fight. Forgotten again the phrase. Fight, desperately fight with all my power for your right to say what you say. I'll defend to your death, I think, is what he said, your right to say what you say. Comes down to this. If Ambassador Luce is fighting communists, as she says she is, she says, in effect, can we afford the luxury of free speech? And we are fighting the battle for freedom here at home, can only say, can we afford the luxury of suppressing free speech, even when Ambassador Luce tells us that we must?